Today we continue our consideration of compassion from various perspectives. So far, we have considered Hinduism, Native American spirituality, Christianity, Islam, and a scientific point of view. This morning, we take a look at what we can learn from the pagan traditions. Although I have some experience with the neo-pagan traditions, the term paganism covers a wide range of earth-centered and polytheistic perspectives. Until a year ago, I used the term pagan interchangeably with earth-centered traditions. While I have learned that it means much more than that, I will admit up front that this is still the form of paganism with which I am most familiar and with which I most resonate. And so I just give that warning in case my prejudices leak through my comments. But rather than get tangled up in definitions, I decided I would ask some of the folks who consider themselves pagans what paganism has to teach us about compassion. The responses, while focused very differently, kept coming back to recognizing our connections, kept coming back to the interdependent web. As one person put it, believing the goddess is within and around and a part of us all, how could we not be compassionate? Our connections, our relationships, our understanding of our place in the order of things teaches us compassion. I'd like to share a couple specific comments from members of this congregation. Heather Neff said, "Pagans show compassion for animals and trees, not just people." How cool is that? And I thought, very cool indeed. Mercedes Gosnell said, "Well, there's a lot of paganism flavors around, and since we're human, we don't always succeed, but we do have an aim toward having compassion for others' differences, whether it be a different spiritual path, different moral guidelines, or different personal attributes, such as sex identification or sexual orientation." There's new among us, I believe, that we have frolicking squirrels, part of the interdependent web. Jeffrey Stewart said that hospitality seems to be the key for him. He writes, "Consider the many folk tales and myths of gods, tricksters, cultural heroes, traveling in disguise and rewarding the good and kind hosts, and often but not always punishing the unkind and selfish hosts. Some would interpret this focus on hospitality as mere superstition. Better behave or the gods might get you. But such people fail to see that in seeing the possibility of the gods in the arrival of a stranger, one is acknowledging that the smallest actions can have import and power far beyond what we may know." It was Jeffrey's comments that caused me to choose the story for today's Words for All Ages. It asks the question, how do we treat the stranger? And what possibilities lie before us in each encounter, as yet unseen? The idea that we are diverse and yet connected kept bringing me back to a set of images that I once saw about how people imagine the divine and the physical world and the relationship between the two. So I'd like to begin by exploring those images for a few minutes and then offer a few moments of reflection before continuing on for some other thoughts. Western thought has long divided the world into two parts, the spiritual world and the material world, the divine and the physical. As with so many things, we quite often assume that everyone else shares our perspective, that everyone else understands the relationship between these things, in this case, the sacred and the material, the way that we do. But if we are to recognize and appreciate our diversity, if we are to offer each other understanding, hospitality, and compassion, then it will be helpful to us to understand the variety of ways that people understand this particular relationship. So, imagine that this red circle represents all things spiritual, the divine and the sacred. Now, imagine that this blue circle represents all things material, the physical world. The question is, how are these two circles related? I'd like to offer you six possibilities. There are more, of course. You are Unitarian Universalists. I'm sure you can come up with a long list. But today, we're going to consider these six. We'll work our way across the top and then across the bottom, left to right. See which one or ones resonate with you or which ones you recognize in someone close to you. Starting in the upper left, there is only a red circle. Someone who understands the world this way recognizes only the spiritual world. What others perceive to be the physical world, they consider an illusion. There is only the spiritual, the divine, the sacred. There are pockets of this in all traditions, often in the mystical branches of the traditions, so I can't point to a specific tradition that represents this perspective. Now next, in the center of the top row, we see the red circle and the blue circle, the sacred and the material world, separated from each other. There is, in fact, a line between them. Someone who understands the world this way believes that the material world and the spiritual world are completely separate from each other. We are part of the physical world. Out there, somewhere, completely separate from us is the divine. This is often a core of mainstream understanding in monotheistic traditions like Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. I'm here, God is there, something completely other. And while I think that this is the dominant view in the Abrahamic traditions, I don't think it's the only way. I think that all of the models that we'll see this morning can be found within those traditions. I just think that that's a place a lot of people start there. But there are a lot of other views. So let's take, as an example, the third item in the top row at the far right. This is a blue circle within a red circle. In this view, there is overlap between the spiritual world and the material world. But notice that the blue circle, that circle representing the material world, is entirely within the red circle representing the spiritual world. In this view, the divine is something greater than the physical world. There is something bigger than the physical world. It usually is understood to have pre-existed the physical world, and it will exist long after the physical world ceases to exist. The physical world emerges out of the spiritual world, and everything that is physical is part of that spiritual world. Another way of saying this is that God or the gods are bigger than the world and exist independently of it. Everything we know is part of the divine, and yet the divine is more than we know. The name often given to this perspective is panentheism. Panentheism, which is different from pantheism, which we find on the left as we move to the bottom row. In pantheism, the spiritual and the material are identical. Everything that exists, pan, all of it, is divine, and all of it is physical. Here we have one circle, and it is purple, representing the red and the blue together. I believe that this perspective is one held by many people who claim the title pagan, although some who claim the title pagan are undoubtedly panentheists. and people who are not pagan claim both of these titles too, as well as the next group, which has pagans and non-pagans in it as well. We move to the center of the third row. The red spiritual circle is completely engulfed by the blue material circle. This perspective is sometimes called natural theism. Everything is physical. Some things within that physical existence are also spiritual. This is the flip of panentheism. Here, it is the physical world that exists before, during, and after the divine. The divine is understood to emerge out of the physical world and is at the same time part of it. And this brings us to our last combination, the bottom row all the way to the right. Here we find only one circle, and it is blue. In this perspective, there is only the material world, the physical. There is no spiritual world, even in part. People who hold this perspective might call themselves materialists or atheists. There are other possibilities, of course. One that is sometimes pointed out to me is having two overlapping circles, where there are some things that are just material and some that are just spiritual and some that are both. But what I'd like us to consider this morning is that the rich diversity of our tradition makes it likely that we have at least four of these perspectives in our pews today. Possibly we have all six. And if they aren't in our pews today, they're in our workplaces, in our neighborhoods, and around our holiday tables. What I want you to remember is this. You don't have to agree with another person's perspective to try to understand it. And in that trying, there are several possibilities. At a minimum, you offer another person the hospitality of being listened to and respected. And as you seek to understand a new perspective, you may find that it's not just the perspective that you understand better. You may also understand the person better. And who knows? As you broaden your view of the way that we can understand our universe and our place in it, you might just come to know your own perspective a little bit better as well. Each of these is an act of compassion. We are opening our heart to another. We'll leave you with this image of the six perspectives and offer you a couple of moments of reflection to consider where you fit and where others in your life might fit. For you, what is the relationship of the spiritual to the material world, the divine to the physical? There's diversity even within each one of these images. But what do you resonate with? Do you resonate with one of these perspectives, several of them? And what about the people closest to you? I invite you to a period of reflection. Thank you. for many in the pagan traditions. However you overlap these circles, there is a deep and important connection that expands through all of existence. What I do matters to the whole. What you do matters to the whole. Touch one part of the web, and the vibrations have unseen effects. We do not act in isolation. And yet, we must act, even though we cannot know all the unintended consequences of our actions. In the pagan tradition known as Wicca, there is a common text known as the Charge of the Goddess, which David shared with us earlier. I found myself drawn to the piece at the top of it, at the end of it, that is quoted at the top of today's order of service, a piece that some have said offers an ethical teaching on which one can base one's actions. It reads, "Let there be beauty and strength, power and compassion, honor and humility, mirth and reverence within you." In addition to the specific qualities listed, this is a statement about balance. It is a statement about how we, with our limited sight, can act in the world, even though we do not know and cannot know all of the impact of our actions and our choices. Find balance. The world needs beauty and strength. Take care not to preference one over the other in such a way as to create an imbalance. The world needs power and compassion. The world needs you to use the power that you have, the power that you have for good. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. defined power as the ability to achieve purpose. The ability to achieve purpose. In the use of that power for good, to achieve purpose, consider compassion, the suffering of others. Just because you cannot know all of your impact does not mean you cannot know some of it. Do not let your drive toward a goal. Do not let your drive toward a goal, no matter how worthy the goal, rob you of your ability to care. Power needs to be balanced with compassion. Likewise, we balance honor and humility. The world is not served by either unchecked ambition or false humility. We seek balance. And finally, mirth and reverence. There are times to be serious and there are times to be silly, but the two intermingle much more often than we often realize. In humor, we would do well to take care that we are not demeaning ourselves or others. And in our reverence, we need to take care lest we become so serious that we no longer find the joy in life. Balance. It helps to heal and nurture the web of existence, the web of existence of which we are a part. Our lives are intertwined. We know this when we choose to become part of a community such as this one. Yet our lives are also intertwined with many other people, our families across the country and around the world, with our neighbors here in Central Florida. And our lives are intertwined with the people who make the products that we use, the people who grow, harvest, and transport the food that we eat. And our lives are intertwined with the natural world, not just here, but also in all the places that those people live. What we do, our choices, our touch, no matter how gentle, on the threads of the interdependent web, send ripples through our whole universe. We are connected. And so all people, all life, all existence, all are worthy of our care and deserve our compassion. Let us seek balance. Let us seek balance for ourselves and for our world, that the tapestry that we help to weave may be strong and beautiful, may be healthy and whole. Please join me in a moment of reflection.